This is The Naked Scientists with Diane O'Carroll and Kat Arney. As well as following the way populations have changed and migrated, we can use modern genetic techniques to really get to know an individual body, as long as it's preserved well enough. Professor Eske Willerslev is from the University of Copenhagen, where he's the leader of an ancient DNA and evolution group. So, Eske, can you tell us, what are the problems about getting ancient DNA samples?
Well, I mean, it varies a lot. The problems, or the magnitude of the problems, actually varies a lot from one specimen or one type of specimen to another. But obviously, one of the biggest problems you have when you're looking at ancient human remains due to contamination with modern human DNA, because many of these specimens has been handled by humans without, you know, protective gloves or anything like that. And also the reagents that you're buying has all been produced by humans, so you can actually have traces of modern human DNA in there.
How do you get around that? How can you avoid that contamination?
Yeah. I think that the last few years we've actually seen a kind of a revolution within ancient human genetics, in the sense that some new technological breakthroughs has happened that makes it possible, for one thing, getting very, very short pieces of DNA out of the specimens. And the thing is that the copy number, you know, of a certain piece of DNA, indigenous DNA, actually increases tremendously if you go shorter and shorter in terms of the DNA you try to retrieve. So that makes a huge, huge difference. You basically, if you go short enough, you can almost swap the contaminant DNA by actually the indigenous DNA. Additionally, you can say the knowledge we have gained about how DNA damage through time can also provide evidence to what extent you're working with indigenous DNA or are suffering from contamination. So some of these breakthroughs really means a lot. Another thing is that if you're working with specimens from another ethnic group, for example, let's say specimens that have been in Britain, stored in Britain, but comes from non-British people, well, then there's actually ways to, you can say, distinguish the DNA you have from being European to some other ethnic groups. So there's ways around it.
So you're using these shorter pieces, but can you then sequence it in the same way that you sequence fresh DNA?
Yeah, in fact, you can. I mean, with these second-generation high-throughput sequencing platforms that has appeared over the last few years, there you can actually sequence ancient DNA in the same way as you can with modern DNA. Of course, there's some issues you don't have with modern DNA. For example, if you have a bone specimen, you know, it's full of bacteria, for example, additional to any modern human contamination that must have penetrated the bone. And therefore, a lot of what you get out when you do what we call shotgun sequencing will in fact be microbial DNA from such a specimen, while from a modern sample, you know, 99.something% of the DNA would be human. So it's more demanding to deal with ancient DNA, certainly.
And probably a bit more expensive. But tell us about Inuk, the guy you studied. What did you have to work on there?
Yeah, there we worked on ancient hair. So it's hair from a 4,000-year-old individual. And hair is actually a really good source of ancient DNA, in the sense that it's not porous like bone, and therefore neither modern human contamination, neither microbial contamination over the years penetrates very far into the hair, and all the contamination is on the surface. So it's quite easy to clean the hair samples from contamination opposite bones, for example, that are porous and where the contamination penetrates very deep. So from that point of view, it was reasonable easy. It wasn't easy, but reasonable easy to actually sequence the majority of the genome, the complete genome of this individual.
And once you'd done that, what did you find out about him?
Well, that was actually quite interesting, and I think it shows some of the power of using ancient DNA, because first of all, I mean, the only thing that people have actually found from this culture, which was the first people who settled in the New World Arctic, it means Alaska, Canada, and Greenland, is in fact, you know, a few pieces of hair and then four small pieces of human bone, okay? And that's all we know biologically about these individuals. And by sequencing the genome of this person, we could show, well, he is a male. We could also show, you know, he had brown skin, dark eyes. You know, we could see a tendency to baldness, for example. So he probably died quite young because it was a fair amount of hair we found from this guy. We could also see he had dry earwax. We could see that he was genetically adapted to living in cold temperatures, although his people hadn't been there for a very long time. We could see what blood type this individual had. We could say something about, you know, his body's stature, that he had a relatively low surface area compared to body mass, and stuff like that. So, you know, there was quite a number of you can say, phenotypic traits that we could actually retrieve from the genome. But additionally to that, we could actually see that he came from a migration that had been independent of those migrations that resulted in present-day Inuits that are people in the New World Arctic, and also independent of that migration or those migrations giving rise to contemporary Native Americans. We actually found evidence of a, you can say, previously unrecognized migration from the old world into the new world happening sometimes around 5,500 years ago.
That seems a bit more recent than, you know, previous estimates have been put. So you know that's definitely independent because of the date.
Well, it's definitely independent, and it's earlier than you can say in that migration that gave rise to present day Inuits or Eskimos, if you want. You know, that's you know, culturally they are only around 1,000 years. Or a little bit more than 1,000 years old. But the thing is, we could see that this guy is actually more closely related to people in northeastern Siberia than he is to either Inuits or to Native Americans.
All that from a few pieces of hair. Thanks, Eski. That's Eski Villeslev on what we can learn from seemingly insignificant remains, provided there's some DNA.